And I like to think that I'm quite good at finding the right ex from all my years, like, on the Pirate Bay back in the day. Shh. But I think I'm out of practice, or they've just gotten more sophisticated, because sometimes I do fall for them. And there's definitely a bit of shame that goes with it when you fall into the trap, the old bait and switch. Hello, you've reached Hotline Design Podcast. How may we help you? And welcome back to Hotline Design Podcast. In this week's episode, we need to talk about dark UX, defense against the dark patterns. We're discussing those misleading UI designs or intentionally bad UX that makes it hard for users to achieve a particular user goal to avoid causing damage to the business employing these tactics. So ladies, I have to know, how have your weeks been?
Hello. Really good week. I feel like the world has opened up a little bit. So I took advantage of that and saw some good friends that we haven't seen probably in months. And yeah, it was good to socialize a little bit. And last night we actually had some friends over and they stayed until like 4 a.m., which generally has not happened since like uni. I feel like
she's a party animal
for once. I feel like generally that hasn't happened since I was like 20, and usually my social evenings end at like 11 maximum. Even that is quite late. So yeah, this was definitely an outlier, but we really enjoyed it, and I'm glad we kind of got to see each other. So that was kind of the highlight of my week. What about you ladies?
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, I think it's so nice that things have started opening up. We can finally go to other people's houses and socialize. So it feels like things are slowly getting back to normal. Yeah, I'm still kind of working through my animation assignments. I am very much behind, and it is quite painful because we're trying to use like these different graphs and stuff. I'm not very good at like using graphs. I just don't deal with mathsy stuff in general. So it's been a bit tricky. But then I've also been making really nice meals for myself because cooking is so therapeutic, and just trying to play the piano and annoying my neighbors in my free time. That's been my week.
Do they yell requests through the wall?
I wish they did, because I saw this TikTok ages ago where there was this man who was like playing duets with his neighbor. Have you seen that? It was like
it
the sweetest thing.
It was so heartwarming and breaking at the same time. It was incredible.
Yeah. Unfortunately, A, I don't play well enough for that to happen. And B, I don't know if my neighbors, I think they can hear slightly, but once I heard someone like banging really loudly on the wall. So I'm not sure if that was directed at me when I was playing the piano. I've been a bit sort of like self-conscious ever since, but you know, who cares? I gotta do something that keeps my brain and my fingers active, I guess, in kind of semi-lockdown.
They're just setting the beat, really. They're trying to duet with you.
Love it. I'm going to take that positive approach on it.
I love it. We were blessed with your playing. Is that the word?
Thanks.
Artistry.
Was it Thursday? And we were so grateful and surprised. We were like, is there anything this lady can't do? Nope, there isn't. And it was amazing. So yeah, keep practicing because we love it.
Oh,
keep on being
so
our podcast prodigy.
Yes.
I'm blushing right now. Oh, well. How's your week been, Lauren?
Yeah, thanks for asking. You said it's been really good. And shout out to you for doing the maths and all your work with the graphs. I used to go up to my math teachers in high school and say, listen, I'd rather do meth than math. I swear I didn't get expelled. But yeah, I can totally relate to your feelings of kind of a math aversion.
I guess this episode is set on explicit again.
Thanks, Lauren.
Once again. Yeah, so I've been actually doing something really wholesome and not been doing math. I've actually been writing letters, getting back to some of, you know, the older crafts. I have a wax seal for my letters, so I really enjoy adding those kind of personal touches at the end. And it's just been so nice. I also make a thing of going to different letterboxes and exploring different parts of the neighborhood when I post them. So that's peak wholesome. And then on the work front, I have been really trying to harness this honey badger attitude towards meetings that don't matter.
Mm.
So I found that recently I've just been kind of the CC, the like looped in person to a lot of meetings, and I really don't need to be there. So I'm trying to take the brave position where I just decline meetings.
Ooh.
Or I drop on and then just say, sorry, I have to drop. I find it really hard though to leave meetings. So I'm trying to get better at just being like, no, I don't need to be here.
Yep.
Bye.
100%.
Without the fear of like appearing rude.
Mm.
But I just think when someone else does that, you know, in a meeting that you're in, you're not like the audacity that they dropped. I find that we don't think that other people are being super sassy for dropping. So I don't know why I have such an aversion, but I'm trying to get better at it.
Mm. I feel like that's a mark of career growth. It's brilliant. Yeah, when you're more
comfortable. It's prioritizing your time.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. I feel like when we were like at the start of our career, that definitely was a lot harder. It's still hard now. I'm completely with you. But I think it's a great mark of growth. So it's amazing.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Sometimes learning to say no to unnecessary things is such an art. And yeah, that's awesome.
Mm.
And speaking of things that inspire us, this week's episode, all about dark UX.
Cool. So what exactly is dark UX, or what are dark patterns? This was a term coined by Harry Brignall, unfortunately not Harry Potter, even though we would really like to keep in line with the theme. So Harry Brignall is a UX specialist who came up with this term in 2010. And he also runs this really funny and informative website called darkpatterns.org. So simply put, dark patterns are tricks used in websites and apps that make you do things that you didn't mean to, like buying or signing up for something. And they often arise when business goals are prioritized over user needs. So for example, you know, if you try and cancel that Amazon subscription, you know, the company makes it very, very difficult for you to actually leave because it might cause them financial loss. Or for example, when you're browsing something on your favorite e-commerce website and you try to leave the page and it just pops up with this thing that tries to get you to stay on, that is also another form of dark UX. There are actually many different types of dark patterns. So darkpatterns.org lists 12 patterns in total. And for the full list, you can head to their website. We probably won't go through all of these 12 patterns, but it's definitely worth having a read because it's super informative and yeah, just broken down into really easy to understand examples. So we'll be discussing the most egregious ones. And also as a side note, we absolutely love the names of some of these dark patterns. They're very funny. The first one is sneak into basket. So this happens when you attempt to purchase something, but somewhere in your purchasing journey, the site sneaks an additional item into your basket through the use of, you know, an opt-out radio button or a checkbox on a prior page that you might not necessarily notice. And one of the examples that I've seen on this was, I think from sportsdirect.com or something, where, you know, they would kind of put, when you try to order a pair of sneakers, and then they would kind of add something extra onto your basket at the end of that order checkout process, like aftercare for your shoes or, you know, some sort of shoe spray that you didn't really need. And then if you were observant, you would obviously try and like get rid of it or be like, why has this thing just suddenly popped up in my basket? But most of the time, I think it, you know, people just kind of go through that ordering process and they don't expect to see additional items that they haven't added, or they might just think it's a free gift. So that is an example of how some companies might try and trick you by using the sneak into basket dark pattern.
Amazon even seems to have a version of that where you can buy something, just a one-off purchase, or it tries to kind of trick you into doing the reoccurring subscription of a product.
Yeah, definitely. I think they always present that as, you know, the better choice. And you find, I think unless you are super observant and kind of read things carefully, you might kind of miss that. And I think that kind of, you know, preys on your, like, I think it's a sort of psychological trick, isn't it? because they probably are betting that most consumers wouldn't like pay a lot of attention to it. And so, yeah, that, you know, probably on the sort of like dark UX spectrum, maybe that's not as, you know, flagrant as like openly sneaking something into your basket, but it's still quite a manipulative tactic.
Very cheeky.
Naughty.
I kind of imagine you saying that to Eno.
Like, naughty, naughty,
naughty, yeah. Naughty Amazon.
So, apart from sneaking to basket, the next one on our list is Roach Motel. And I just love this name because, I don't know, it kind of compares you to a cockroach, right? Like, and you imagine this little maze and then you're kind of like sneaking into it, but unbeknownst to you, you can't get out of the maze. And that's why it's called Roach Motel. You get into a situation very easily, but then you find that it's really difficult to get out of it. So, you know, it's a bit like luring a cockroach into a bait trap. Then when you want to try to leave, that website or app you're using just makes it impossible for you to like quit.
Awful.
Yeah. Yeah, so on this one, I guess an example would be, again, Amazon. I mean, you know, generally, I'm not just attacking Amazon, even though it does have many problems. I do really enjoy using it. But when I was doing a bit of research for this episode, one of the videos that I watched basically outlined how it was practically impossible to cancel your Amazon account. It's just so hidden. So I thought maybe I would give it a try for myself because that video I watched was produced in 2018. And I don't think things have significantly improved since then. If you sign into Amazon, you would expect your account information to be under your profile or your account settings, but it's actually not in there. I think you have to go into a different tab in order to find out like how to close down your account. And I didn't really want to wade through that quagmire of, you know, all the different options and having to find exactly the right one to cancel my account because it's just such a convoluted process. So I just typed into the search bar at the top of the page, cancel my Amazon account. And unsurprisingly, it's one of the most searched for options. I clicked on that and then it said, okay, it just gave me a page of all of the reasons why I shouldn't close my Amazon account. I think there were like at least 9 or 10 bullet points being like, by canceling your Amazon account, you will lose access to this, to this, to this, to this, which doesn't make it very user-friendly or actually actively impedes you from trying to achieve that user goal. And then it said at the bottom of the page, if you want to cancel your account, you have to contact us. But there was there wasn't any text or any information on how to contact Amazon. There wasn't even a link being like, this is how you can contact us, and these are our contact details. I actually had to go back to the search bar and type in again being like, how do I contact Amazon? And so it just kind of takes you down on a different user journey altogether, which is so frustrating to say the least.
Naughty Amazon.
Naughty, naughty.
Naughty.
They do that with, you know, Prime Video, where you can add channels for, I think it's $3.99. Like a very respected intellectual. I, for example, want to watch the Kardashians every week. In order to do that.
Yes, the essential texts.
Exactly. And you have to subscribe to Hayu, I think. I'm probably saying it completely wrong. To watch the Kardashians, which is $3.99 a month on top of like your Prime. And it's super easy to subscribe. But when the Kardashians isn't on, and unfortunately it's coming to an end very soon, in that mid-term kind of like summer or whatever, when they don't release episodes, I don't want to pay for that. And it's so hard to figure out how to cancel it. I did it twice and resubscribed when they had new episodes. And every single time I had to Google how to cancel that. You can't, like, it's not easy to figure out at all. Yeah, it's not the easiest.
And then you think about people that aren't tech savvy. Like, I think we're at a bit of an advantage as UX designers. Because we usually know where to look. Because we're usually designing kind of solutions that are in line with those principles. So when we're having a hard time, I really worry for, like, people like our parents.
Oh yeah, as an aside, sometimes my boyfriend's grandparents don't know how to figure something out, so we literally have to give them a step-by-step tutorial and then write it down in paper. So yeah, I feel for people who are just unaccustomed to knowing where to find things on digital products.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like they're really vulnerable to these dark UX patterns when, like, they're not used to them being everywhere.
Think of the elderly.
Exactly.
Always.
Exactly. And then another example of the Roach Motel, kind of, is also with Facebook. I think it's really hard to cancel your account. You, like, again, you kind of have to Google how to do it. And when you do it, you have to give them a reason. Like, you can't not give them a reason. And that leads us into one of our other dark patterns types. And I love this one. It's called privacy suckering, named after, obviously, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. And it's when you are tricked into publicly sharing more information about yourself than you really intended to, which is basically what Facebook is known for at this point. Yeah, and you are tricked to kind of give your data away for absolutely no reason. Whilst also on other sites, for example, you are tricked into hidden costs, which is another type of dark pattern where, let's say, I am ordering a dress from a website and then they put like £10 extra for delivery when there was no mention of kind of delivery fees anywhere until that point. Like, weird taxes are a thing as well. I don't necessarily think this is a dark UX pattern, but for example, with Deliveroo, I feel like you think your meal is £7 and then you go to checkout and it's like 15 because there's a service tax, there's obviously a delivery fee, which you kind of expect, admin fee, there's so much on top. And I'm a bit like torn. I'm not sure if it's necessarily dark UX, but it's definitely unexpected. And you're so like, I'm hungry now, so I'm just gonna have to pay it, I guess.
100%. Yeah, I always feel like, yeah, it starts off as 7 and then it's like 20.
Yeah,
where did this come from?
Yeah,
okay.
Have you
one
seen that
for the rest of the week?
Have you seen that story of the dad who gave his phone to one of their children and they ordered an onion off of Deliveroo and it costed like 20 quid? It was like literally a 60p onion, and it was like one charge was small order fee and then another charge was the delivery fee, and it was literally £20 for an onion.
Wait, where are they getting this onion from? It better be premium from, I don't know, like
organic.
Waitrose, pretty much. It'd be a perfectly sphere shaped onion, because
Wait.
If it's not, I'm going to be so disappointed.
I want it to be the onion carriage from Shrek, too. I expect a lot of my onions.
So the large brown onion was £1.50. The small order fee was £13.50. There's you literally can get a meal for that. And then there's a delivery fee of £4.50. And then there's a 49 pence service fee. So that's how a £1.50 product ended up being £19.99.
I hope the kid is really happy, and like, I think they should have put googly eyes on the onion, and like, the onion's his best friend, and
Aww.
Like, takes him to school.
That would make
yeah.
it worth it for sure.
I could see an entire book series of like, the boy and his onion. Amazing. Another aspect of dark UX is the old bait and switch, which is where you try to kind of do one thing, but then a different undesirable thing happens instead. One of my least favorites is the kind of hidden X, especially on a lot of like websites, if there are pop-up ads, there appears to be like an X, but that might just take you to the product's like website. But there was like a secondary like hidden X that was the right one to close the pop-up. And I like to think that I'm quite good at finding the right X from all my years, like, on the Pirate Bay back in the day. Shh. But I think I'm out of practice, or they've just gotten more sophisticated, because sometimes I do fall for them. And there's definitely a bit of shame that goes with it when you fall into the trap, the old bait and switch. And then lastly, we have confirm shaming, which is the act of guilting the user into opting into something or out of something. So, for instance, when you try to, like, opt out of a subscription and the text is really spirited and shaming in one way. So I've seen ones that are like, wow, you really don't want to shop these awesome deals and lose money? You hate saving money, you ignorant slug?
Oh my God, I've seen that. If you hate money, click here. Like, yeah. Oh God.
Like, go away.
Yeah. And I know they're trying to be like, oh, like a really cool brand voice. But I'm also like, girl, the disrespect.
Yeah. What I love about this kind of topic as well is that I guess it's become so prominent that it's made it into academia. And we are kind of getting some statistics and facts, I guess, from people who are starting to research this at universities. So in 2019, Princeton University and the University of Chicago found that 1 in 10 e-commerce sites employ dark patterns, which is slightly reassuring because I genuinely felt like it was a lot more. I feel like I can live with 10%, but equally when 50% of shoppers probably shop on Amazon, I'm kind of like, yeah, but one of these 10 is humongous. So I guess that D reassures me. I just made that word up. But yeah, so the researchers in these studies call the majority of these dark patterns covert, deceptive, and information hiding in nature, with many of these patterns also exploiting our cognitive biases. And I guess the more D reassuring thing, I'm just doubling down on that word, is that it's not just e-commerce sites, it's big tech firms as well. In their TNCs, they hide so many things that you don't realize you're signing up to. With Instagram, they can use it in their advertising. Just by you posting a picture on Instagram, it can become literally their advertisement. And you don't realize that when you sign up, but it's in their terms and conditions, therefore you can't do anything about it. And every week, I feel like you can read in the news another big tech firm being sued, usually by the European Union, for something naughty that they're doing.
And can we even talk about kind of some dark UX elements of the terms and condition page?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like the smallest text, and you kind of have this like infinite scroll within the box, but the call to action is like right there just to like accept all terms and conditions.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this also plays into dark UX, right? Like terms and conditions not being worded in a consumer friendly way. And like you said, you know, when the call to action button to accept that is so prominent, no one's gonna scroll through like infinite pages of, you know, legal jargon to kind of understand what exactly they're giving away. Maybe they, you know, you could even sneak in a clause there to be like, sell your soul. And I would probably just still like not read it and click on accept.
Mm, joke's on them. I've already sold it.
Zach has it. You can't have it too.
Yeah. We might be thinking that like, yeah, this can't be legal kind of dark UX is super sneaky, super misleading. And unfortunately, it kind of is legal in most places, but California is leading the charge with legislation and has actually banned dark patterns that trick users into giving away their personal data. And then this strengthens the application of the 2018 California Consumer Privacy Act, the CCPA. And so this act really gives consumers the right to say no to companies that are selling their personal information. But it's really interesting to note that not all of these dark UX patterns are banned. And really, it's only the ones that have substantial effects on subverting or impairing consumers' choice to opt out of schemes where their personal data is being sold. So one of the things that they're trying to ban is, say, the use of double negatives and really confusing jargon, so you don't really have to like solve a riddle every time you're trying to understand some clause. They also can't make their users click through infinite reasons to persuade them not to opt out of things, or make them scroll or search through a document to locate the mechanisms of submitting a request to opt out. So by banning certain UX dark patterns, California is really seeking to strengthen the enforcement of this law and also ensuring that the consumers will not be super confused or misled when they seek to exercise their data privacy rights.
One example of this happening is when LinkedIn was fined $13 million in 2015 for sending spam emails on users' behalf. This was basically to encourage others in their personal network to connect and join them on the platform. So, for example, Yusin could email me saying like, oh, join me on LinkedIn. And I'd be like, oh, Yusin's inviting me, so I'll join. But actually, it wasn't Yusin. It was someone else.
There was like a heyday where I think I was receiving 10 of those a week, to the point where I really started to hate LinkedIn.
Same. Mm. I used to think, what is this scummy site? It's never going to be successful because they just keep spamming people.
So we did say like they were fined 13 million, but when you think about it, that literally is $10 per user. And I don't necessarily have the data of how much LinkedIn makes off of us every month. But I do remember there was an article that came out from Facebook recently, and it was like £15 a month per user. And then if you are from the US, it's like $48 a month that they get off of each user. And obviously they have billions. So when you think about it, the fact that LinkedIn paid once $10 per user, they're just going to make that next month. It's really kind of like pennies for them. Yeah, I'm not sure how effective it was. Although I guess they stopped, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's definitely a good thing. I don't have to contend with multiple emails coming into my inbox being like, hey, join LinkedIn. Like, look at all these other people who have joined so far. And, you know, plot twist, just to realize that it wasn't sent by them, it was sent by LinkedIn.
Naughty LinkedIn.
So, actually, in the UK, there are also certain provisions to prevent companies from using dark patterns. Before, you know, that whole Brexit fracas, there was this thing called the EU Consumer Rights Law that was introduced in 2014, and it banned certain dark patterns related to e-commerce across Europe, including the sneak into basket tactic that we talked about earlier on. Hidden cost is also technically illegal. So, you know, sites can't just sneak things into your basket or, you know, kind of charge you for things at the end without clearly explaining what it is you've been charged for. So I guess that gives us a certain amount of hope that, you know, states or that there are regulations cracking down on dark UX to prevent companies from manipulating people who wouldn't know any better. But, you know, dark patterns do tread a very fine line between what is legal and what isn't. And just because something is legal doesn't mean it's not necessarily bad UX. Actually, I just used the double negative there. But I think which is pretty...
Straight to jail.
Oh dear, I have to buy a bunch of those Monopoly, like, get out of jail cards. But yeah, so, I mean, like Lauren, you mentioned earlier on as well, like, in California, even though, you know, they've got one of the strongest applications of law against some of these nefarious, like, dark patterns, they're not actually banning every single one. It's just those that prevent you as a consumer from, you know, being tricked into selling your personal data. So at the end of the day, companies could still employ these sneaky tactics. And, you know, it would still be dark UX, just not necessarily illegal. So I think probably as consumers, it's really important for us to be educated about these sorts of patterns and kind of look out for ourselves, which is why we're doing this podcast, you know, public service announcement.
And on the topic of needy patterns and kind of like, yeah, dark UX light, there's things called like the please don't go modals, where it's a very kind of needy tone. So for instance, you know, when you go to click like exit out of the tab and it's like, wait before you go, or like, please don't leave us, or like, are you sure? Where technically, yeah, it wouldn't be illegal, but it definitely is like a very annoying friend with attachment issues, where they're doubting the legitimacy of your click to the X, which I think is like a little bit disrespectful. And ultimately, if anything, it's probably a bit annoying. And on a storyline of something truly needy, I once signed up for this beer subscription called Beer 52, and it was great. Like, I got a crate of, like, craft beers. It had one of those really good, like, first-time offers. So I signed up. And I really enjoyed it. But I found out, actually, I can't drink that many, like, tropical IPAs. I'm more of a lager lady. So after the first one, I wanted to cancel because there was, like, literally one lager. And to cancel, you could go to the tab on the website and it said, like, you need to call us to cancel. Which already, like, red flag that you can't do it online. And, of course, you have to call between specific hours. So I set a reminder. I called. And the guy on the end of the line was so nice. And he spent the first, like, 5 minutes of the call really becoming my friend. And then was like, okay, so, like, why do you want to leave? Can you explain it to me? Take me through the narrative. And because I had been lulled into this false friendship, I just made up a completely imaginary story about how I, as an American, like, I'm Canadian, but I made up this completely false narrative and imaginary life. I, as an American, was leaving the country, and therefore Beer 52 don't service the states, so I just couldn't carry on with it. So ultimately, ever since that moment, I've been living a lie. Beer 52 basically forced me to go into witness protection and to assume an alternative identity. So I think in terms of, like, exit journeys and that kind of needy UX that actually, like, breached into just, like, needy human interactions, I think that they were by far the worst one I've had.
Oh, no. Are you still not a fan of the tropical IPAs as a result?
Yeah, no. It's just like, if I want fruit punch, I'll have fruit punch. If I want beer, I'll have a lager. I know it's a very controversial opinion, but I stand by it.
Oh, don't worry. We're here for the controversy. I think, not that on the same scale, but another example of kind of like a needy pattern that comes to mind is Duolingo. And I feel like everyone who has ever tried to learn a different language on Duolingo and has activated their notifications can probably relate to the pain that they were inflicting to this parrot. Like, we are all terrible people for not doing our Duolingo homework. Like, you would get these emails that said, you made Duo sad. We haven't seen you in a while. Like, take a 5 minute lesson now. And just like, oh, there's this one where it's like, hi, I miss you. Do you want to practice your Spanish today? And it's just like, yeah, really needy. And Nielsen Norman says nobody likes a needy website, and we don't like a needy parrot either.
One of my favorite things about the Duolingo parrot is there are so many memes of like, the Duolingo parrot has taken your parents and family hostage. Do 10 minutes of Spanish now. It's kind of become just like a joke throughout the internet. I wonder if they can kind of get away with it because it's kind of become their thing.
Yeah, but I feel like you have to be one of these like meme/internet people, because I feel like there is a demographic of one, children, and two, like, let's say, elderly people who are just like, oh, I'm just gonna learn a language, have some fun, and they just wouldn't get the jokes. So yeah, maybe they can get away with it. I have no idea if they stopped. I haven't tried using it for a while.
So many therapists are just like, day in, day out, all we hear about is how the Duolingo parrot has really messed people up.
Definitely.
Speaking of something that will never judge you or hold your parents hostage, we have this week's Hotline Design Hotline.
Hi, Hotline Design. I'm Aga, a long-time listener and first-time caller. I've come across dark patterns on the web quite often, especially on e-commerce websites and pop-ups, try to shame me into changing my mind. I find this really annoying, but as a designer, how much say do you have when your company wants you to do something that benefits them over the user? Thanks.
Hey, Hotline Design Hotline caller. I think that's a great question. Yeah, it's a bit of a tricky one because obviously, you know, sometimes your job as a designer, especially as a UX designer, is to kind of balance those like user needs, but also business requirements. And it's quite tough sometimes because, you know, you kind of want to do something that ultimately is going to be good for the user. But when I mean, personally, obviously, I haven't been asked to thankfully create any dark patterns that could manipulate people because I think I would push back. But sometimes when you're given these business requirements and you have to comply with them, it is a bit, it might seem like a bit of an uphill battle to fight against them. And sometimes I don't know if you both have experienced this, but like sometimes I'm just like, oh, it's just easier to give in and just kind of do what the business wants you to do. But then if I think about it, as designers, we kind of had that responsibility to do what's right and, you know, educate the companies we work for that using dark patterns in the short term might help them reach that particular financial or like monetary goal. But if you are using dark UX and you present so many barriers to your user goals and also mislead your users, in the long run, this isn't good because it destroys your relationship with users.
Definitely.
And will cost you your reputation and brand loyalty.
So thanks so much for calling in, Aga. So I would say if you're having to kind of have this fight or conversation a lot with kind of stakeholders or your company, I would definitely advise trying to educate them a bit more broadly about dark UX. So I think it's just by the fact that it's dark, kind of, it's got like a sexy ring to it. So I think it would actually make for a really interesting brown bag where you kind of present some of the content we've even mentioned in this episode and have examples, maybe slides of the different types of dark UX. And I think people as consumers can really relate to that. So I think it's really important to show them and kind of bring it to a level of, don't you find it annoying when you're experiencing these dark UX patterns? And then based off of that education piece, kind of flip it on your requirements and say, you know, people might be annoyed if we're forcing these kind of tactics on people. So I definitely think it's a great opportunity to educate kind of your wider project team and stakeholders.
Absolutely. I think also if that doesn't work, you can turn around the conversation and talk to them about the value of long-term trust over just one transaction that was maybe $5, £5 more by having employed that dark UX pattern. I think consumers have so much option these days that it's so easy to lose someone by employing one of these tactics. I'm obviously not the user of like in every type of user, but I know from like my experience, I hold a grudge with companies sometimes. So for example, I don't know if we mentioned this before, but Adobe's subscription model is so awful, where you think it's a monthly thing, but it's actually, you sign up for a 12-month contract, and when you try to cancel, you have to pay half of the amount you would have paid if you didn't cancel, and in order to cancel, you have to call. It's so like such a like, I in my eyes, it's the epitome of dark UX. And because of that, I literally don't pay Adobe with my own money anymore. Like if the company has it, the company has it, and I'll use it. But I don't like buy Adobe products anymore. And also, I tell people not to get into the subscription as well. Like. And I feel like that is a bigger loss than if I would have the opportunity to kind of dip into my subscription and cancel when I can. And like the lifetime, I think that there is like a business metric, right? It's called like the, what is it called? Customer lifetime value? Is that what it is? Yeah, perfect. So I think you can kind of approach your business people and say, look, the customer lifetime value is impacted by these dark UX patterns. Yes, we are maybe selling an extra $10 worth of something, but we are losing all these customers long term. Therefore, it's actually affecting our business. And maybe when we kind of talk to them in the language of losing money, they are more likely to listen to us.
Yeah, the reputational damage, like, it's a bit cheeky, it's a bit tacky. Overall, I think it really decreases the quality and trustworthiness of the experience.
Hmm. Agreed. Absolutely. Yeah.
And if all else fails, when you kind of come across these dark UX patterns, you can always just bitch about them on the internet. A good old-fashioned tag and drag, name and shame. And so you can now report examples of dark UX on Twitter, where else, by using the hashtag dark patterns. And this was started by darkpatterns.org. And other people, probably other disgruntled UX designers, will reply to the tweets and probably say they're relatable and be a community for you to lean on in these times of cheeky, tacky, naughty. Dark UX patterns. So naughty. And if you have a naughty question you would like to submit, you can do so at anchor.fm/hotlinedesignpod. And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at hotlinedesignpod and Gmail at hotlinedesignpod@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening and have a great week.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected. Please check the number and try your call again.